Walking into Carbon's sleek Manhattan office felt like entering another dimension. The private equity firm managed billions in assets, and suddenly I was part of this secretive world. Fresh from prestigious academic achievements, but uncertain about my future, I found myself answering to Boone, one of the firm's powerful partners. His demeanor, poised, unyielding, and brilliant, both intimidated and fascinated me. The interview process had been rigorous, taking place in an opulent conference room overlooking Central Park. Each conversation was a high-stakes dance where I had to anticipate the music before it played. My boyfriend Josh had presented an ultimatum during the interview process: choose between our relationship or this career. I chose Carbon. Something about the challenge, the exclusivity, and yes, the validation of being selected pulled me forward. The first day, Boone gifted me 4 books on peak performance, a not-so-subtle message about expectations. I need immediate email responses, he instructed, and efficient note-passing in meetings. Even simple tasks carried hidden complexities in this world. Have you ever felt that mixture of terror and exhilaration when stepping into something much bigger than yourself? That's how those first weeks felt. I believed this role was my calling, a perfect fit for my skills and ambitions. The golden handcuffs were still shiny and new, not yet revealing how tightly they would eventually bind me. At Carbon, executive assistants formed a hidden but vital infrastructure supporting powerful money managers. During a welcome dinner at the Mark Hotel, 10 assistants engaged in careful conversation over cocktails, with Sloan, the apparent alpha, interrogating my background while I managed urgent texts from Boone. A minor oversight in Boone's transportation the next day taught me the fundamental rule: anticipate needs before they arise. When he later requested an impromptu surf trip, it became another test of my capabilities, with each task serving as a performance indicator. Among assistants, information was valuable currency. We collaborated while competing for status, which was determined by our proximity to power. Questions like, "How's Boone's mood today?" were subtle attempts to gauge firm dynamics. We operated in a parallel ecosystem, facilitating billion-dollar deals while navigating our own complex social hierarchy. The Mandarin Oriental Conference showcased elite networking at its finest. Managing VIP logistics, including for Jamie Dimon, honed my diplomatic skills. Boone's fireside chat with Jamie offered invaluable insights into market trends that would ripple through global finance. Casino night in the Hall of Ocean Life merged entertainment with strategic networking. The James Bond atmosphere, elegant guests forging vital connections over games, reflected Carbon's calculated approach to risk and opportunity. At Jazz at Lincoln Center's Investor Day, Carbon's leadership presented their investment strategies and expansion plans. Meeting Elias Cohn revealed an unexpected truth: he and Boone were collaborators, not rivals, a lesson in finance's hidden alliances. These events were carefully orchestrated performances, projecting success and expertise. Behind the scenes, we worked relentlessly to maintain this illusion of effortless perfection. Professional life, especially at Carbon, was theater on a grand scale, with billions depending on the convincing display of competence. Maintaining equilibrium became increasingly difficult. My unopened journal symbolized neglected self-reflection. When my friend Yuna visited, we connected over shared immigrant experiences, though exhaustion prevented me from showing her local attractions. Our talks highlighted her pursuit of creative fulfillment versus my chase for financial success. A gym accident while checking work emails exposed the dangers of constant multitasking. Instead of slowing down, I intensified my work pace, ignoring my well-being. I recognized how chikku, the Mandarin concept of enduring hardship inherited from my immigrant parents, made me vulnerable to a workplace that demanded everything while offering only validation. Physical stress symptoms became unavoidable. Late nights, missed meals, and constant adrenaline created a mounting toll on my health. With Yuna, I confronted my identity crisis. I don't know who I am anymore. Everything revolves around Boone's needs and Carbon's priorities, leaving no room for myself. Carbon's culture, centered on an uncompromising pursuit of excellence, applying its investing approach across diverse markets from startups to mature corporations. Boone's personal stake and investment philosophy set the standard for maximizing every opportunity. The annual retreat embodied this high-performance culture, blending mental and physical challenges. Participants presented investment strategies under rigorous evaluation, seeking 10-baggers, investments with potential 10-fold returns. After Neil's departure and the Sun Valley Conference, Boone implemented Jim Collins' concepts of the Big, Hairy, Audacious Goal and 20-mile march, with Carbon's BHAG targeting exceptional returns over 15 years. At Carbon, excellence wasn't optional. It was fundamental. While this drive delivered outstanding results, it created an environment where individual worth was measured purely by utility, leading to burnout and turnover. Young Ivy League recruits like Sean found themselves immersed in relentless talent, adapting to roles optimized for productivity. The message was implicit but clear: be exceptional or be gone, making weekend work the norm. Carbon's stated mission of making a distinctive impact remained vague, and while Boone engaged in personal philanthropy, the firm avoided broader social responsibilities. This disconnect sparked questions about values in a profit-driven culture. The firm's sophisticated tax strategies, though legal, highlighted the finance sector's economic disparities. Carbon expertly navigated wealthy-friendly regulations, raising questions about the ethics of legal tax optimization. As Fund V concluded successfully, I observed Boone's preference for swift fund deployment with minimal operational involvement. This approach intensified my inner conflict between professional duties and personal ethics, particularly regarding market dynamics that seemed to perpetuate inequality. Boone's confidential investment offer left me feeling both privileged and uneasy. The secrecy reflected Carbon's culture of selective benefits and highlighted how wealth can compromise moral judgment. I found myself participating in a system whose values increasingly conflicted with my own. After years at Carbon, Val and I appealed to Boone about our burnout, but he dismissed our concerns as a mindset issue, offering only empty promises. When I followed Boone's suggestion to seek therapy, my therapist confirmed my job was the source of my distress. This validation helped me see the problem wasn't me, but the environment. Despite Boone's counteroffer of sabbatical and promises, I knew leaving was right. A spa retreat gave me space to envision life beyond Carbon. 8 years later, I've found peace. The outfit that once symbolized compromise now feels natural, mirroring my journey to self-acceptance. My childhood dream of writing has become reality through this memoir. Agency, the power to shape our lives by our values, is precious. My journey showed that success without fulfillment is meaningless. Private equity revealed stark contradictions, brilliant minds creating both value and inequality, high pay alongside impossible demands. The lesson is to define success personally. While institutions like Carbon offer prestige and wealth, the costs are steep. True prosperity includes agency, authenticity, and alignment with our values.